arm. She drew her legs up, surreptitiously feeling in her pocket, but the Tawali travel token was gone. There wouldn't be any easy way out of here. She glanced around the room. There were no windows, no obvious ducts. It would take her a few seconds to get up, another few seconds to rush him, and she'd seen how fast he was when he attacked. She tried to push herself up to stand. Something tugged at her leg. She tugged back and realised that her left ankle was locked into some contraption jutting out of the wall. Oh, what? It looked like a chain from a medieval torture chamber. And then a wave of panic hit, claustrophobia combining with the setting. Her hands were trapped, and now she was locked to the wall as well. For a second, she felt as though she really were in the prison from her nightmare. She fought the chain wildly. Get it off! The chain jerked her back again and again like the jaws of a live animal. Under it all, the fog of the drug lingered like sleep. Sorry, Joan. I can't let you hurt anyone. Nick hadn't moved, but there was a shadow of something in his eyes now. Concern? Confusion? He hadn't expected her to react quite like that to the chain. I can't unlock that. I can't allow you to touch anyone, so you'll need to calm down. Calm down? She'd love to see him if he were trapped somewhere like this. Inadvertently, she remembered him in that chair, mouth bloody, begging for mercy for his family. She squeezed her eyes shut, trying to breathe. She thought about how Astrid had run right up to her, as if the staff had had an alert out on her. "You knew I was coming," she said. "You told me you would," Nick said. "I believed you." He shifted his weight. "So what's your plan? I assume you came to kill me?" "No," Joan said. "No, Nick, I came here to talk."
"To talk," he said flatly. He didn't believe her. "What about?"
"You." His lips compressed. He'd never liked talking about himself. Joan hadn't known why until she'd seen those terrible recordings. "My people are prepared for any attack," he warned her. Joan felt a wave of hurt. Did he really think she'd launch some attack on him in a house full of tourists? There were ordinary people outside. Did he really think she'd do something like that? Another voice sounded from outside the cell. "We won't get the truth out of her without artificial help." It was Astrid, straight-backed and grim. When they'd volunteered together, Astrid had run activities for the kids. She'd been a competitive fencer, and she'd shown the kids how to fight with foam swords. She must have been there on the night of the massacre, Joan realised. Had any of the other staff been with Nick too? Allies of the hero? Joan swallowed. Apart from Nick, Astrid had been her closest friend in the house.
"I don't want to drug her again," Nick said to Astrid.
"We need to know what she's planning," Astrid said. "You said it herself, she's dangerous. She wants you dead. And there are tourists here. We're responsible for more lives than our own." They left Joan alone for a little while. She examined the handcuffs. With some effort, she took a bobby pin from her hair and had a go at the lock, concealing her movements behind her crooked knees. She hadn't gotten very far before Nick and Astrid returned. Nick tossed Joan a bottle of water.
"What's this?" Joan asked.
"Water," Astrid said, "with something in it, almost as good as the Griffith's power."
The Griffiths could induce truth, Joan remembered.
"There's no such thing as a truth serum," she said.
"Not in this time," Astrid agreed.
"Drink. At least a quarter of the bottle." Joan unscrewed the cap and drank half the water under Astrid's narrow gaze. She was thirsty, and she wanted them to know that she wasn't hiding anything.
"How long will it take to work?" she asked.
But to her surprise, she could already feel it. Warmth and relaxation spread through her, from her chest to her fingertips. Rather than truly relaxing her, though, she felt the same muffled panic as when she'd inadvertently tried to travel.
"Don't fight it," Astrid said.
But Joan couldn't help herself. She fought the blurry feeling as she'd fought the chain. She'd never liked feeling out of control.
"What's your name?" Astrid said.
"Joan Chang Hunt." It came out in a weird, forced burst. The drug really could compel her, she thought with a shot of fright. She hadn't expected it to work like this. Her mouth felt separate from her brain.
"Is your father human?" Astrid said.
Joan was shocked by the question. She shook her head, trying to clear it. The movement felt wobbly. She clenched her teeth together. The desire to answer truthfully was as intense as the need to breathe.
"Stop fighting it," Astrid said. "Where's your father?"
"I don't know," Joan blurted. That was the truth, she realized, relieved. She had no idea where he was right now.
"Is he human?"
Joan struggled not to answer. It was even harder this time. "Yes! Stop asking me about him."
"All right," Astrid said to Nick. "You can talk to her now."
After Astrid left the cell, Nick sat down with Joan, just out of reach, his back against the iron bars. They watched each other for a while. The strange thing, Joan thought, was how familiar Nick's presence felt. Something about him made her think of safety, of home. That wasn't real, though. Maybe it had been real in some other timeline, but not in this one. "What was your plan in coming here?" he said.
"To talk," Joan said. "To talk to you."
His mouth turned down.
"To distract me while someone attacks us?"
"No."
"Is someone here with you? Is someone else coming? Are there weapons involved? Explosives?"
"No,"
Joan said.
"Explosives? No, no."
Did he really think so little of her? But he'd already made it clear that taking any time at all was the same as murder in his eyes. It was why he killed monsters. Joan remembered the look on his face when he'd found his family dead in his childhood house. She thought of Gran lying dead. Between them, there'd been so much blood.
"Nick," she said. She let the compulsion speak the truth for her. "I came here to talk to you. That's the truth. You know I can't lie right now."
His eyes were as cold as when he'd addressed Edmund Oliver.
"Talk, then. What do you want?"
What did she want? There were too many answers to that question. She wanted her family back. She wanted none of this to have happened. She wanted to be with Nick. She couldn't lie to herself, not with the drug in her body, not with him right here. She wanted him, even after everything that had happened between them. Even after what he'd done, she still only ever wanted to be in a room with him. She hated it, but she couldn't deny it. To her relief, the drug didn't know which answer to force from her. She could pick one true thing.
"Peace," she said, "between monsters and humans."
"Peace."
Nick was still leaning back as though relaxed, but his mouth tightened.
"I killed your family, Joan. Are you saying you could ever forgive me for it?"
"No,"
Joan blurted, forced to answer. Nick seemed to stop breathing for a second.
"No,"
he said softly.
"Just like you could never get over the fact that I'm a monster," Joan said.
Nick's answer took longer to come this time.
"No,"
he said. Something about the pause made Joan wish he'd been compelled to speak the truth too. But he didn't need to take a truth drug. He never lied, not directly. Joan's breath hitched. So there it was, the harsh truth of it. If Jamie's story was true, then Joan and Nick had been together in another timeline. If the story was true, then the new timeline was still trying to repair itself by bringing them back together, over and over. But it was doomed to fail. What was broken between them couldn't be fixed. "I'm not talking about peace between you and me," she said. It hurt to say it.
"There'll never be peace between monsters and humans," he said.
"Not as long as monsters steal time. And you can't help yourselves. You all crave it." Joan shook her head. She didn't.
You crave time travel.
The compulsion answered for her. Yes, she blurted. She pressed her lips together. She had barely admitted that even to herself. The method of travel was a kind of focused yearning, and the yearning was always there in the background. It had been there as long as she could remember, in her love of history. I can control it. She was relieved to hear herself say it. If the compulsion allowed it, then surely it must be true.
Can you?
Yes. Joan sat up and tried to inch closer to him. Her heart thudded when he pulled back his feet fast. Stop asking me questions, she said. I can't stop myself from answering, and I have to tell you. She took a deep breath. You told me about your family. The man who killed them
is dead.
I know. You killed him.
Every monster knows that, he said.
It's in all your childhood stories. Joan had never thought about how Nick might see those stories, his own suffering as a fairy tale. He broke his neck. Nick stilled. That wasn't in the stories. You were tied to a chair before they died, Joan said. You were tortured.
Nick sat up slowly from his slouch. The pretense of relaxation had ended. You shouldn't know that, he said, soft and dangerous.
It was recorded, Joan said. Nick clearly hadn't expected her to say that.
What?
I'm so sorry. But I saw what he did, Joan said. Your whole family was killed. I saw them. Nick, I'm so sorry he...
Stop, Nick ground out. Stop.
But Joan couldn't. You have to know what they were actually recording. She wet her dry lips. They were recording the process of making you into the hero.
Nick's eyes hardened. The only sound in the room was their breathing. Joan was very aware that the walls of the basement were 5 feet thick. The basement had once been a wine cellar. You could scream and scream down here and no one would ever hear you. She had to wet her lips again before she could speak.
The stories say that you were orphaned by monsters and destined to kill them. But you weren't destined. You were crafted. You were made into this.
Stop, Nick said. And Joan felt a surge of real fear at the look on his face. She was suddenly very aware that she was trapped in a room with the slayer from her childhood stories. But the drug was still working. It forced her to keep speaking.
They didn't just do it once, she said. They killed your family over and over. They reset the timeline so they could torture you over and over.
Stop, Nick said again. Stop lying.
I'm not lying. You know I can't.
Drink the rest of that bottle.
Joan's stomach was churning. There was a good chance that she'd throw up if she drank, but she unscrewed the lid and took a deep breath, then forced the rest down. It sloshed unpleasantly in her gut. The drug took effect even faster than the first dose, and this time, the out-of-control feeling was worse. Joan had the urge to babble anything to Nick, to say truths he hadn't even asked for.
You were made by monsters. She was stumbling over the words now. They came out faster than she could speak them. They killed your family as a kind of origin story, to motivate you to hate us. Then, she made a guess,
then you were trained in how to identify us, how to kill us. She could see in his face that she was right. Nick, you resisted them. You didn't want to become this. They had to do it over and over until you broke.
You can't change the timeline over and over. It isn't possible.
I can't lie, Joan said desperately. You know I can't.
He had to believe her.
Nick shifted out of his relaxed posture to his feet, fast and smooth and lethal. Joan found herself scrambling back. Nick, she said, please, you have to believe me.
Please, he said, looking down at her. Is that what your victims said at the changing of the guard?
Joan shook her head.
No. They didn't beg, did they? He said. They didn't even know what you'd stolen from them.
Joan's next breath stuck in her chest. He really was going to kill her. But instead of moving closer, he took a step back and then another. He opened the cell door without a word and locked it behind him. Key first, then a heavy bolt. Panic ran through Joan at the sheer claustrophobia of it. Nick, she shouted. But he was already out of sight. Could he still hear her? Whether he could or not, the drug was still hammering at her to speak. Joan screwed her eyes shut, trying to think around the desire to say truths. Nick hadn't believed her. She couldn't blame him. Who'd want to hear what she'd told him? That everything he knew about himself was a kind of lie. The truth was, she'd never thought he'd believe her, but she'd had to try. She'd had to know if there could be any chance of a better ending. Now she felt around on the floor until she found the bobby pin. As she did, the drug worked at her harder. It was going to make her narrate her escape, she realized. A hysterical laugh bubbling up. She struggled against it, but, just like before, the desire to speak was overwhelming. She needed to placate it with a different truth. "The first time I met you," she could hear the raw emotion in her own voice. She closed her eyes. The drug wasn't just forcing her to speak, it was forcing her to feel it. "The first time I met you, it was like I already knew you," she said, "like I'd known you my whole life." There was no response from Nick. She hoped he wasn't there. "Wherever you are," she said, "I wanted to be there too. You were like the sun. I was always turning toward you." There was a slight click as the spring gave on the lock. She blinked out of her reverie. "Focus," she told herself. "You kissed me that night," she said. "I'd never wanted anything so much. Later, I thought maybe you'd been playing me the whole time. But then, at that 90s cafe, I started to wonder. Because you didn't kill me, even though you knew I'd stolen time." She heard footsteps, and then Nick was looking at her through the bars. Joan's heart skipped a beat at the sight of him. He hadn't left. "The Liu family has a story," she said. "They say that there was once another timeline, one that existed before our own." "I know what you're doing," Nick said. "You're working on those handcuffs. It's pointless. You're not leaving this cell." "Don't you feel it?" she said. "Don't you feel that this timeline is wrong?" If he did, he wasn't showing it. But the drug didn't care. It forced more words out. "The Liu story says that in the original timeline, the hero was just an ordinary boy in love with a monster girl," she said. "Stop," Nick said. "They say that if people belonged together in that first timeline, then our timeline will always try to bring them back together. They say that..." "Joan, stop." Joan wanted to laugh. "I can't. Your stupid truth serum is making me talk and talk and talk. I think you'd have to kill me to make me stop." His hands came up to grip the cell bars then, knuckles whitening. "Oh, you don't like that idea," she said. "Why not? You killed everyone else." "You've taken time," he sounded formal. He'd said those words to other monsters just before he'd killed them. "You can't be allowed to harm another human." Joan twisted the pin just like Gran had taught her. She almost had it. "So you're going to kill me then," she said to him. "Or will you ask someone else to do it?" Something dark and dangerous crossed his face. No, he wouldn't let anyone else touch her. "What's the alternative?" she asked. "Keeping me prisoner here? Turning me in to the police? What are you going to say to them? She touched their necks." "I'm sorry, Joan," Nick said. "I don't believe that we're whatever it is you think we are. The fact is, I should have done my duty a long time ago. The fact is that you're a monster, and as long as you're alive, you'll hurt people." There was a click as the left cuff finally released. Joan shook it off. With another click-click, she had the right cuff off too. She showed Nick her free hands. "It doesn't matter if you're cuffed or not," he said. "You don't have any time to travel with, and if you travel without time, you'll die." "You can't keep killing us," Joan said. Her throat felt so tight. "I can't let you." "You're locked in that cell," Nick said. "You need human time to travel, and I won't let any human in there with you." Joan braced herself. She wasn't sure what she was more afraid of, this next bit working or it not working. "You're right," she said. "I do need human time to travel. But I've had a hunch about something since I woke up in here."
She could hear the fear in her voice now. I'm not just half monster. I'm half human, too.
Nick's eyes widened in realization. Joan reached up to touch her own neck.
Joan, don't!
The words sounded torn from his throat. Joan wondered if he even knew he'd said them. Joan wrenched time from herself. Distantly, she could hear Nick fumbling with the key, but the loudest sound was her own screaming. When she'd taken time from people, they hadn't seemed to feel it. But this was like tearing into her own flesh. She fell to her knees in agony. How much time had she taken from herself? She had no idea. The door burst open. Joan let herself look at Nick for a fraction of a second longer than she should have. She'd always yearned for him, she knew. Just like the need to travel was always in the background, so was her need for him. She gave in to the other yearning.
Chapter 23. The cell was dark and very cold. Joan crouched where she'd fallen, grief overwhelming the relief of escape. It wasn't that she'd lost Nick, she told herself. She'd never had him, not in this timeline, not after what had been done to him, not after what he'd done to her. She felt around in the dark. There was no resistance from the shackle. Joan was relieved. She'd been afraid it would come with her. She took a tentative, crawling step, and her shoulder hit the wall, making her grunt. She felt bruised all over. She had a flash then of Nick shouting to her, "Don't!" What had he meant? Don't what? Don't take time from yourself? More likely, don't escape. She remembered what else he'd said. I should have done my duty a long time ago. Joan swallowed back tears. Her eyes were adjusting to the darkness now. The far wall was still iron bars and a door. Joan touched her hair. No more bobby pins. The one she'd been using was in another time. She was going to have to pull the wire from her bra. But when she went over to look at the lock, the door swung open at her touch. It wasn't locked. Wasn't even properly shut. Somewhere at the back of her mind, a warning bell sounded. This wasn't right. Nick would have posted a guard here. When had she landed? She half expected alarms to go off as she stepped out of the cell, but there was no sound. She walked down the corridor, through the old staff room, up the short flight of stairs. As she surfaced into the house, a dry dust smell hit her, along with the more usual notes of wood and wool. The silence was eerie. Joan's apprehension grew as she walked. The first room she came to was completely unfamiliar. It took her a while to understand that it was the breakfast room. There should have been a roped-off dining table with a replica Georgian breakfast, plum cakes and buttered toast and jam. But all the furniture was gone. The great tapestries of Bacchus and Venus had been stripped from the walls. The house was still grand, of course, even naked. The walls were flocked velvet. The ceiling was a geometric marvel of gold and white. But with no one here, the grandeur had a feeling of impending dereliction. A house like this needed a staff to maintain it. Without them, the house would fall apart. Through the bay windows, the sun was setting. Joan had a shuddering feeling of déjà vu, remembering the last time she stood at bay windows here, looking out onto the falling night. How far had she travelled? If she walked out of the grounds, what would she see? Had she travelled a year, 5 years, 10? For all she knew, she'd stolen all the life she had left from herself. She could drop dead before her next breath. She really, really couldn't think about that. The house seemed empty, but that didn't mean that the grounds were unpatrolled. The library had a decent view of the surroundings, and from the colour of the sky, there were about 20 minutes of light left. Joan made her way through the china room. That had been stripped too.
The curator, Murray, had been so proud of the Holland House china collection, all those paper-thin cups with matching rose patterns. Gran had died 2 rooms away. Joan's breath hitched. She forced herself up the stairs. On the next floor, the door to the yellow drawing room was open. The gilt room was visible just beyond. No Olivers this time. No Nick. Just 2 empty rooms. Joan opened the library door. For a split second, she expected it to look just as it had when she'd left it. Shelves of leather-bound books. Reading chairs. But of course, whoever had stripped the house had been here too. Only the bones were left, a long corridor of empty shelves. The ceiling was still a deep evening blue, speckled with gold stars. Joan had always loved this ceiling. She looked out onto the Dutch garden. The flower beds were weedy and overgrown. The only movement was the wind in the leaves. The house seemed abandoned. She drew a finger through the dust on the windowsill. The last time she'd been in this room, Nick had been here too. They'd sat together in this same dusk light. Then he'd touched her cheek and they'd kissed. And then, her breath shuddered out, then they'd heard the sounds of the monsters arriving. Maybe in the true timeline, she and Nick had kissed that night too. Maybe they'd both pulled away and laughed a bit, and then maybe they'd kissed again. Maybe afterward, they'd walked through the gardens and on to Kensington, gotten a kebab and an ice cream. Maybe they'd promised to see each other the next day, and the day after that. The sound behind her was soft, a footstep against the wooden floor. And then, Joan really did understand why she'd come up here to the library, why she hadn't already left the house. She was always drawn to him. She supposed he was drawn to her too. The timeline would never stop trying to repair itself as long as they were both alive. She turned from the window. Her stupid heart leaped at the sight of him. Nick was in shadow as he approached, but Joan could see that his hair was longer. He still looked the same, though, film star handsome, dark-haired and square-jawed, and he still radiated that same otherworldly goodness, the hero to her monster. It wasn't fair, she thought. They'd never had a chance in this timeline. They should have had their whole lives together, but now there was only this. Stop, she blurted, as though she could stop what was about to happen. To her surprise, he did stop, just a few paces from her. He'd set it up like this, Joan realized. The empty house. Just her and him here alone, no one watching, no potential collateral, no more excuses for what had to be done. You were standing by that window the first time I saw you, he said. His voice was the same as ever, steady and deep as calm water. I remember, Joan said. She couldn't bear this. She couldn't fight him yet. She wasn't ready. There had to be enough time left in her for another jump, maybe a bigger one this time. Nick stumbled closer, as though he couldn't help himself. Please, he said. Please don't take any more time from yourself. Of course he knew what she was thinking. They'd always been in accord. The step had brought him into the last of the light. Joan saw then what the shadows had hidden. He was only a little older, but his expression was different. Where last time he'd been resolved, now he looked raw and unsure, like the night they'd kissed. I had a long time to think, he said, to wonder how much time you took from yourself. Joan braced herself. She'd expected a terrifyingly fast attack, something like what he'd done to Edmund Oliver, but he was just standing there, hands open and unthreatening by his sides. Now, she thought, he was going to do it now. But still, he stood there. The tension was unbearable. He took a shuddering breath. Joan, he said, the first time I saw you,
I knew what your voice would sound like before you said a word. Joan stared at him. The memory came back to her in sharp clarity. Nick had walked into the library, head bent over an open book. Joan had been charmed by the careful way he'd cradled the book, protective of its fragile corners. She remembered how he'd looked up and seen her, how his eyes had widened just before she'd spoken. "I knew what your laugh would sound like," he said. "I knew you were a restless sleeper, that you kicked off the sheets, even in winter. I knew you put fresh ginger in your tea. I knew that if you were faced with two choices, you'd always choose the right one over the easy one. Nick, this timeline is wrong, isn't it?" he said. For a long moment, Joan couldn't speak, even with the remnants of the truth drug demanding it. She'd been braced for anything but hope. When I first saw you, I felt like I'd known you my whole life. Her own voice came out sounding horribly vulnerable. She quashed the hope ruthlessly. If you were faced with two choices, you'd always choose the right one. But she hadn't, had she? She'd done terrible things. Nick took another step closer, and Joan backed up unthinkingly. Something like agony crossed his face. He lifted his empty hands, showing her that he wasn't armed. But he never needed to be armed. He'd started out in the guilt room unarmed. "The last time I saw you," he said, "you told me that we were together once." Joan couldn't take her eyes off him. "I said that I didn't believe you," Nick said. "And then you took time from yourself. You screamed. I thought you were dying. I still hear it in my dreams." He wanted to come closer, Joan could see. But he stood there, rooted to the floor, hands still half raised. Joan quashed the hope again. There wasn't going to be a happy ending, she reminded herself. She was a monster and he was a hero. Everyone knew how that story ended. Her next breath felt too heavy. Nick saw that too. He always saw everything. He wanted to reach for her, she knew. She could read him as well as he could read her. But it wasn't her he wanted to reach for, not really. He wanted the other Joan, the Joan who made the right choices. That Joan had died in the massacre along with her family. The Joan who'd lived was a monster now, in every sense of the word. She'd stolen time. Even now, some terrible part of her wanted to travel and travel, crossing decades like pirates crossed seas. "What are you doing, Nick?" she said. "Didn't he know that drawing this out was torment?" Nick lowered his hands slowly. "I don't know." He sounded as raw and lost as Joan felt. "I've always put the mission first. I never allowed myself anything more." It sounded like a lonely life. Joan remembered the kitchen where Nick had found his family dead. The fridge behind him had been covered with photos. Nick and his brothers and sisters blowing out birthday candles, laughing at the camera. She remembered his Spartan locker, the Holland House staff room. Now, in the silence of the library, his breath sounded unsteady. "I never allowed myself to feel anything," he said. "But then I walked into the library that day, and I saw you." Joan remembered how he'd walked through the door that day, and when he'd looked up, she'd known him. "Someone changed the timeline," he said. "But they couldn't make me forget you, not completely." His dark eyes were intent on her, as familiar as her own heartbeat. "I love you, Joan." Joan heard herself make a soft, choked sound. How could something she'd wanted to hear so much hurt so much? No matter how much she wanted to travel in time, it was nothing to how she felt about Nick. From the moment they'd met, she'd only ever wanted to be near him. "Don't,"
she whispered. It was too much to bear.
I know, he said. There was so much pain in his voice. I know how much you hate me.
Joan shook her head, even though it was true. She hated him. She loved him. There was a rift inside her, and she was being torn apart by it. She took a breath and barely controlled it.
It isn't me, you remember, she managed. I'm not her. I'm not that other Joan.
The Joan from the true timeline, who'd made the right choices, who'd probably never stolen time in her whole life.
I know who you are, he said.
You don't. She suddenly couldn't bear the way he was looking at her. I've stolen so much time, she said hoarsely. She didn't even know how many people she'd stolen from. Had to be hundreds, maybe even 1,000. She and Aaron had been in the pit for ages. She'd used at least 30 years from the travel token to come back here. For a second, her revulsion at herself choked her breath. And then Nick did step closer, as though he couldn't stop himself. Joan could almost feel the warmth of him in the cool air of the abandoned library. If she reached out, she'd be able to touch him. She clenched her fists instead. Whoever we used to be, we're not those people now, she said. If you feel anything for me, if I feel anything for you. She watched his eyes darken as he realized what she was saying. It's just a remnant of another timeline. We're different people now.
What they made me into, he said.
Yes.
And what I made you into.
Joan's breath stopped in her throat. She couldn't take her eyes off him.
I'm sorry, he whispered. I'm so sorry, Joan.
I did those things, Joan whispered back. He'd killed her family, but it had been her hand on the back of innocent people's necks. It had been her choice.
I don't even know how many people I've killed, Nick said, soft, a confession.
She could hear it in his voice then too. He was as sick at himself as she was at herself. I wish, Joan swallowed, I wish we could be different.
What if we were? Nick said.
What do you mean?
We can't change what we've done, Nick said, but we don't have to be the people we were made into.
He sounded shaky.
You told me once that you wanted peace between monsters and humans.
Joan stared at him. The woman in the recording had said that she'd chosen Nick because his virtuousness could be twisted into righteous fury. The woman had thought she'd made Nick perfectly, but she'd been wrong. Joan understood that now. There was something incorruptible at the core of him, something good that not even 2,000 attempts at torturing and breaking him could erase.
You really think it's possible? Joan said.
She wanted peace more than anything. She was half human, half monster. She didn't just want peace. She felt broken without it.
I can't bring your family back, he said. But if we can make this timeline better, I want to try.
Joan knew then. She wasn't in love with that other Nick. The Nick who'd never been this hero. She wasn't that other Joan. She was in love with this Nick, the Nick who'd suffered unimaginably and turned that suffering into wanting to protect people, and who still, even now, could imagine a future that was different. She took the last step and reached up to touch his face. He let her, unflinchingly.
Can I kiss you? She whispered.
He made a soft sound and reached for her with a kind of desperate relief that made Joan's heart jump. He was bare-necked, she realized, as he pulled her into his arms. All she'd have to do was to slide her hand to his neck, and he'd be dead. His trust almost undid her.
I've loved you since the moment I saw you, she said. Since then and before that, now and forever.
I love you. He whispered back, I always have. Joan closed her eyes. She could feel tears starting as his mouth touched hers,
and the timeline responded. The monster part of her sensed it as her mouth opened under his, a shift in the world, as though vast, jagged pieces were knitting together. The timeline was repairing itself. Just for a second, she let herself feel it. She imagined that she and Nick could really have this, that they could be happy. And then she opened her eyes and unleashed her strange power on him. He huffed a shocked breath into her mouth. Joan, he tried to pull back, but Joan tightened her arms around him. She knew what she had to do. Joan drew power from the depths of herself, and her power responded as if it had been waiting for her call. Something forbidden, one of the guards had called it. In a way, Joan had always known what her power could do. She hadn't transmuted the metal into stone. She'd turned it back to ore. She'd unmade it. And now she unmade Nick. There was nothing gentle about it. Power poured out of her. His body jerked and shook with it. His face became a mask of pain. Joan, he mouthed. Joan, please. Joan forced herself to keep going, even as he started to scream. She was properly crying now. Around them, the house started to shake. Joan unmade him. The force of it shook the walls. Plaster cracked and dust rained down around them. She unmade everything Nick had done and everything that had been done to him. She unmade the lives Nick had taken. She brought her family back. She unmade Nick until he wasn't the hero anymore. Until the Nick she loved was gone. And at the end of it, everything had changed. Epilogue. The last weeks of summer were long and warm, even as the leaves started to turn. Everyone agreed that it had been the loveliest London summer in years. In the city's parks, wildflowers bloomed later and longer than anyone could remember. Sweet peas, daisies, violets and honeysuckle. Joan missed the end of it. She'd come down with what Gran worried was the flu, and Uncle Gus thought might be heatstroke. But Joan knew it wasn't a human illness. Unmaking Nick had pushed her power beyond its limit. She'd burned through every last spark of it to change the timeline. Now, whatever ability she'd had to unmake things was gone. She could feel the absence inside herself even after her body started to heal. And her power wasn't the only absence inside her. She dreamed of him. Sometimes he was in the Holland House Library. Sometimes tied to a chair in his childhood home. Always he was screaming, begging her to stop. Joan woke shaking and reaching for him, words still thick in her mouth. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. I love you. If the dreams were bad, though, being awake was worse. The last moments at the house came back to her over and over. She remembered how Nick's eyes had widened, how his chest had shuddered as he'd started to scream. She remembered the look on his face as he'd realized that she was doing this to him, that she wasn't going to stop. She'd told him she loved him. She'd kissed him, and then she'd torn him apart. Too weak to get out of bed, all Joan could do was lie there and remember and remember and remember. No one else did. Holland House. Gran felt Joan's forehead with the back of her hand. You mean the old ruins in Holland Park? Why would you want to go down there? I mean Holland House, the house in the park. Joan tried to sit up, but Gran coaxed her back down. There's nothing there, love, Gran sounded worried. You still have a fever. I'm going to call Dr. DeWitt again. Joan had never been a good patient. As soon as she was strong enough to stand, she pronounced herself well and headed straight for Kensington High Street. She made it halfway up the street before she stumbled back to Gran's, half dead on her feet. Serves you right, Gran said, but her voice was gentle. She guided Joan back to bed. But maybe willing it to be true made it true, because Joan got stronger and stronger every day after that. As soon as her legs would hold her, she headed to Holland Park. She went back the next day and the next. The morning that Dad was due home, she felt almost her normal self again. When she came into the kitchen that morning, she found most of the family already up. Joan paused in the doorway, feeling the same shock of relief and disbelief as she felt every time she saw them now. Uncle Gus was at the stove stewing pears. As she watched, he plucked fresh pears from an empty fruit basket and tossed the peelings over his shoulder, where they vanished into thin air. He spiced the pears with a heavy hand. Gran's side of the family liked strong flavors. No matter where Gran was living, her house always smelled the same of cinnamon and saffron and cardamom and cloves. "I bet I could steal the Mona Lisa," Ruth was saying to the others. She was using Gran's broken radiator as a window seat. Her curls were a stiff black cloud around her face. "You're not seriously going to eat that," she added as Gran took a bite of toast. She groaned. "Oh, that is wrong." "Dorothy, throw it out," Aunt Ada said. "Please." "I like it like this," Gran said. "It's burnt," Bertie said. "I like it burnt." When they'd been dead, Joan had dreamed about them. She'd never been able to conjure all the little details, though. Gran's hair was a grey cloud, frizzier at the ends. Her dressing gown was frayed at the hem. And she may or may not have liked burnt toast, but there was a sly, amused quirk at her mouth as she ate it. She always enjoyed horrifying people. Beside her, Aunt Ada was spreading Marmite onto a slice of pale toast. She was in a white suit, and there wasn't a spot of Marmite on the suit or her plate. Joan had asked Ada once how she always stayed so immaculate. Ada had grinned and kissed the top of Joan's head. "It's just confidence, love."
"Anyone could steal the Mona Lisa," Gus said to Ruth now.
"I'm not talking about snatching it from the old man's hand," Ruth said.
"I wouldn't do that," Gus said. "What do you take me for? I'd properly steal it too."
"It's only a copy, anyway," Bertie said. This drew everyone's attention. "One of the Venetian families bought the original," Bertie said, as though he was surprised that they didn't know. Paint was still wet.
"You sure?" Ada said. "I heard the Nightingales bought it. Same deal, paint wet."
"How many of them did Leo sell?" Bertie said.
"Yes, but the point," Ruth said, "is that I could steal a painting from the Louvre."
She saw Joan in the doorway then.
"But I would never do that," she added sing-song, "because theft is wrong."
"Teacher's here," Ruth would sometimes say when Joan came into her room. She'd always said it fondly, almost with pride, as if she were saying, "Joan's an astronaut, actually." She jumped off the radiator and slung an arm around Joan's shoulder.
"Right," she said. "Last day in London. What do you want to do?"
Joan felt a familiar flash of fondness, along with a pang of something sharper. How many times had she come into a room and felt the conversation halt and change like this? Joan doesn't like shop talk, not in front of Joan. "I," she started.
I know, you have to go somewhere first and you'll meet me after."
Ruth bumped Joan's shoulder gently.
"Where do you keep going?"
"Nowhere fun," Joan promised. She took a piece of toast from Ruth's plate. "You finish with this?"
"No," Ruth grumbled, but she didn't really sound grumpy.
She'd been more worried than she let on by Joan's illness.
"Take some fruit if you're planning to walk,"
Uncle Gus said. He plucked a blood orange from Gran's fruit basket and gave it to Joan.
"You need to keep up your vitamin C."
Joan had forgotten that detail too. Uncle Gus thought that vitamin C could heal everything from the common cold to a broken leg. Her smile wobbled, and she swallowed hard. She'd missed them all so much. The blood orange was sweet-scented and heavy, red as a sunrise, perfectly ripe, And out of season, she realized slowly, oranges were winter fruit. Maybe it was imported, or maybe someone had traveled to winter. She looked back up at Gus.
I'm fuss-spotting, aren't I? He said.
Joan shook her head. Nah. She managed a proper smile, but she put the orange back in the bowl. I'd better get dressed. Gran was sitting on the front doorstep when Joan left the house. She shuffled over to let Joan pass her. Geraldine from two doors down just walked past with a cat on a leash, Gran said. Big ginger Tom with white paws. Woman must be having a midlife crisis. She drank her tea. Will you be home for dinner? I'm making treacle pudding. On impulse, Joan bent to give her a hug. They weren't really a hugging family, but after a surprised second, Gran put her mug down and hugged Joan back. The formidable Dorothy Hunt, Aaron had called her once, but in Joan's arms, she felt fine-boned and fragile. Wouldn't miss it for the world, Joan said. Joan remembered when she'd first returned to Holland House, a week ago now, still so ill that her legs would barely hold her. Her first glimpse of the house had been as much of a shock as seeing her family alive again. The old ruins in Holland Park, Gran had called it. But nothing could have prepared Joan for the reality. The West Wing was gone. The library where Joan had met Nick. Sabine's room where Gran had died. The East Wing was still there, but gutted. All that was left was the facade, now wrapped around a hostel. Joan had wandered inside in a daze and found a modern building, unrecognizable in layout. Where the gilt room had been, now there was a dormitory in cheerful kindergarten colours. A pamphlet in the information office had said that the house had been bombed in the war 22 times in one night. Joan took the pamphlet to Roger's seat, the hidden alcove overlooking the Dahlia Garden. The house might have changed, but she still knew some of its secret places. There, curled up and half hidden by a curtain of leaves, she read about the new history of the house. In her own timeline, a private company had bought Holland House in the 1950s and turned it into a museum. In this timeline, the house had been destroyed before that could happen. The burned husk had been sold to the Royal Borough. It was all there on the page, in black and white with citations. Joan had sat there for a long time. Whatever the pamphlet said, she knew that she'd done this. When she'd altered Nick's history, she must have altered the history of the house too. It had just had the bad luck to be in the proximity of her power. And she couldn't help but ask the question, if she'd done this to Holland House, what other changes had she inadvertently made to the timeline? Now, on her last morning in London, she walked the familiar path from Kensington High Street to what was left of the house. Where do you keep going? Ruth had asked. Joan didn't know why she kept going back. Penance, maybe. The heaviness in her chest made more sense when she could see what she'd done to this place she'd loved. But it wasn't just that. There were memories here that were nowhere else. She could walk through the gardens and imagine that he was here with her. As Joan walked, she was joined by joggers and people pushing prams and walking dogs. There was a football field where the maze had once stood, and she could hear the distant smack of the ball, people shouting, the ref's whistle. After the long summer, the weather had finally turned. It was cool and drizzly as she walked past the house's facade, past the little cafe, past the old ice house. In the other timeline, food historians had churned ice cream within its thick walls, using fresh fruit from the kitchen gardens. In this timeline, it was a gallery space. Joan lingered in the covered walkway between the ice house and the old orangery. This bit was new, built after the rest of the house had been bombed. There were murals all the way down the wall, depicting a garden party in the Victorian era. Joan's favourite was the one where the partygoers were in an elaborate formal garden, ankle-high hedges creating intricate green loops. Women in voluminous skirts lounged against a central fountain. Whoever had painted this couldn't have known the house, but they'd captured the mysterious atmosphere of the old gardens. Joan stepped closer. She could almost have kept walking into the painting, she thought dreamily. She caught herself with a sharp breath before the tug of yearning came. Almost automatically, she grounded herself in the details of the moment, as Aaron had taught her. The smell of wet stone, the patter of rain outside the colonnade. Footsteps. Deja vu washed over her. She turned toward the sound, knowing already it wasn't Nick. She'd have recognized the rhythm of his step. Still, her heart skipped in disappointment at the confirmation. The newcomer was a soberly dressed man, perhaps 20 years old. He shook his umbrella carefully into the garden and then made his way down the walkway, stopping at the mural beside Joan. His face was pale and Chinese. Familiar, Joan thought. But recognition didn't come until he stepped closer to the painting with an air of intent interest. He'd been an artist, she remembered. Jamie Liu had been gaunt as a prisoner, but in this new timeline, he was solidly built and healthy. He had an expensive haircut, and he was dressed for colder weather than it was, gloves and a dark blue trench coat. I've met you, Joan wanted to blurt out, except that she hadn't met him, just like she hadn't met Nick, hadn't met Aaron. Sometimes, the weight of remembering when no one else did made her feel like she was going mad. She'd seen people lying dead in these gardens, except that she hadn't. Her family had died here, except that they hadn't. I love these paintings, she said a little awkwardly. She needed to hear him say something. She knew what his voice should sound like, and she needed the proof that her memories were real. You almost feel as though you could step into the party. That would be nice. To her relief, his voice was the pleasant treble she'd expected. He turned to her, seeming curious but not uncomfortable. It certainly looks like they were enjoying better weather. She smiled tentatively. I'm Joan. I remember, he said. The Liu's remember. Joan shouldn't have felt as shaken as she did. She stared at him. Jamie gestured toward the garden beyond the walkway. Shall we go for a walk? He offered his umbrella to her. Joan found her voice. It's not that bad out. I know, but... Jamie looked up at the gloomy sky. I don't much like the wet. Joan remembered him as a boy, bare feet splashing in the lake. He loves water, Tom had said. What had happened to him as a captive? Whatever it was, he seemed changed in this timeline. The clear-eyed boy who'd painted fish by the lake had been replaced by a man with a wary but polite demeanor. He held the umbrella solicitously over Joan as well as himself as they walked, even when she protested that she didn't mind the rain. They took the path around the old orangery. Through its arched windows, Joan could see people preparing for an event, setting tables with shining silverware and flower arrangements. In Joan's memories, there'd been potted orange trees in this part of the garden, outside in summer, to be put back inside the orangery in winter. I don't remember much, Jamie said. The Liu power only gives me fragments of the other timeline. Looking at his gloved hands, his coat, Joan wondered, what do you remember? She asked. I remember that the hero was real. Joan heard her breath shudder out, half relief and half pain. Just hearing someone else speak of him felt like a broken taboo. I'm sorry, Jamie said. I know what he was to you. I had to do it, Joan whispered. My family, she swallowed. I had to. They passed the summer ballroom. Joan kept her eyes on the path, afraid to see sympathy in Jamie's face. There were rose bushes here, a little overgrown.
I know, Jamie said gently. Joan heard him breathe in and out. I remember my captivity, he said, and Joan's heart twisted, remembering the boy he'd been. She turned back to him. Does Tom know? Jamie shook his head. When I left home today, he was painting the boat, green paint all over him. For just a moment, as he spoke of Tom, there were no shadows in his eyes. He looked almost like his younger self. Tom's happy in this timeline, he said. I have you to thank for that. How do you lose stand it? Joan wanted to ask him. How do you stand remembering when no one else does? But she could see how Jamie stood it, the same way she was going to have to. He just bore it. Thanks to you too, she reminded him. You got that message to us. You told us the hero was made. Did I? Jamie sounded uncertain. He didn't remember, Joan realized. A strange loneliness washed over her. She thought about the day they'd all gone to see him. Her, Aaron, Ruth, and Tom sitting by the pond. She remembered how warm the sun had been, how glad she'd been that they were all there with her. Whatever differences they'd started out with, they'd been a kind of team in the end. But Aaron would never remember that day, and neither would Ruth or Tom. Not even Jamie remembered it all. I don't remember leaving a message, but... Jamie hesitated. His gloved hand was tight on the stem of the umbrella. I know she's still out there. The woman who took me captive. The woman who'd made the hero. Did she remember what she'd done? Did she know what Joan had done? Whether she did or not, Joan knew. It's different this time, she promised Jamie. If she comes back, we'll be waiting. Jamie didn't exactly look reassured, but he met Joan's eyes and nodded. He tested the air with one gloved hand and pulled the umbrella down. The rain had stopped. They stood there together, watching the sky clear. There were ruins here by the path, crumbling brick arches covered in ivy. These ruins had been in the previous timeline too, the remains of some long-forgotten structure. Joan looked beyond them to the house. From this angle, she could see scars on the brick walls where the west wing had been. From this angle, she could see how much of the house had survived. 22 bombs in one night, and these walls were still standing. There was a little blue appearing now between the clouds. The sun was coming out. Joan lifted her head to feel it. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Only a Monster by Vanessa Lenn, performed by Vera Chock. Presented by Harper Teen and Harper Audio. Executive Producer Almeda Bainan. Text copyright 2022 by Vanessa Lenn. Production copyright 2022 by Hodder & Stoughton Limited. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.